Welcome to the Swiss Cheese Brain Effect and Cheesecake Emporium, or How I Learned to Live With and Accept FASD with RJ and Mustang Annie. Today is our 8th episode, and I can't believe that we actually have 8. This is really amazing that we've been doing this actually for, it's 9 weeks, but we kind of missed a week, but 8 full episodes, so I'm really excited about how well this has been going. Tonight we're going to be talking about perseveration, and I say that with a question because I'm not sure if I am saying it right, but perseveration. And we're going to put a little bit of a different twist on it tonight than what I think most people, what they talk about perseverating. RJ and I are both really strong in how we feel about this. We're both in agreement and how it has affected our lives. So I know RJ has written something from quite a while ago that hits this topic perfectly that he wanted to read. And after talking with him, I too just sat down and started writing about how this topic has affected me greatly. So, RJ, do you want to talk a little bit about how it's affected you or anything about this word that is even hard to say?
No, I'm kind of bored with it all. No, I'm just kidding. Hi, Ann. Hi, everybody. I'm really, really excited to be here. Perseveration generally is seen as a negative fixation on a subject or something like that. Historically, it's been associated with TBI, traumatic brain injury, but it's only in the last few years that people like yourself and even, you know, myself in my own minor way are finding that if we can perseverate in a positive way, that can actually be very, very helpful. So I don't know. Would you like me to go into my own little story about that right now?
Yeah, I would. Is this the story from at least a year or so ago?
Yes. Well, I guess I should set it up. Almost 2 years ago now in the summer, for those who don't know this, I am estranged from my youngest child. She's currently being raised by her mother and her stepfather, and our relationship didn't end in the best possible way. Now, sadly, the ex does not allow me to have access to my daughter, and, you know, that's being what it is what it is. However, when she was 13 years old, she decided that it was time she wanted to meet her father. So she did get in touch with me because I've always been in touch with her, but she finally was able to answer back. And we set something up for, like, I don't know, it was just a few days in advance. Her birthday was coming up. And I was suddenly in a position where I could go down and meet my daughter, who I hadn't seen in 12 years. So, emergency situations being what they are, bus is the quickest way to travel here in northwestern Ontario if you want to go from point A to point B. Greyhound, as a matter of fact, I am. And so I decided to take this trip down to see her. It was an incredible trip. I had a wonderful visit with my daughter. However, the problems that I have with traveling on the bus are known to some. It's not something that I do comfortably, especially alone. So I hadn't been on a bus in probably 20, 25 years when I went out to do this trip. It was an interesting trip. When I got back, I was still so ramped up that I needed to get something out. And basically, it's the story of the trip. And as I go through it, you'll begin to see how the perseveration, the need to be there for my daughter, drove me to do this and that and the other thing and get back home and do it all properly and, you know, thought out, so I, as a person living with FASD, did not get caught in a situation where I was reacting badly or anything like that. So with that, I'd like to present the story that I wrote a long time ago. It has not been edited since it was written, and I called it way back then, The Story of RJ and the Dirty Dog. So a long time ago, in a galaxy not far, far away, RJ needed to travel to see a fair princess. The dirty dog said, "Let me take you there. I will show you a beautiful world." Says RJ, "Will he offer me his jaws?" "Yes." The dog goes on, "I will show you the world along the way and bring you to wonderful places with friendly people who only want the best for you. You will arrive happy and on time." "Mighty big words," says RJ to himself, "mighty big words. All right, dirty dog, you may take me upon your back and transport me. Pay my fare and I will make this journey one to remember," said the dog, salivating and rubbing his hairy paws together. "We'll have fun." RJ paid the fare. "Get against that wall and don't move," said the dog. "Wait until the people I have already with me go back inside my great belly. For you see, you will not be riding upon my back, but within my bowels," he continued with obvious glee. RJ waited, holding his bag of supplies, and waited. Finally, the ugly beast roared and said, "Get into my belly," which is just what RJ did. Never before had he entered such a hive of scum and villainy, until now. There were lost souls the beast had already devoured, and many had lost their way as human beings. Becoming foul beasts themselves, they yelled and hooted and bounced around. Some had obviously been eating cabbage, perhaps laced with tear gas. This belly of the beast was a foul and dangerous place. RJ found a place beside a fair young maiden who was also sitting in disbelief. The dirty dog had told her the same lies. They understood each other's fears. Through the long, dark journey, they kept each other safe and would watch while the others slept. They watched each other's belongings. Along the way, the great beast would take these hapless people to places in the dark of the night. Many of these places were dark parking lots where they would stand outside the beast, smoke and wonder at what it was going to do to them next. Many of the places, though, did have something called restrooms or washrooms. There was none of the former, and they definitely needed the latter. Foul, evil places few would dare to tread. Instead, they relieved themselves in the belly of the beast itself. The journey finally came to its end. Late and ruffled, RJ came to a stop in a strange land. He set off on foot in the burning sun and wind, mile after mile, trudging across the tundra to find the beautiful princess, and all was good. Nothing the dirty dog or his minions had done could stop this from happening. It was good. All too soon, however, the spell was broken. The princess returned to her tower, and the dirty dog smiled. But in the meantime, RJ had met the wolf and the she-wolf, and they took him in and gave him aid. Spending time with the wolves was good for his soul. The pups made him smile, and the dirty dog smiled too, for he knew RJ must re-enter his cavernous bowels to return to his home. Would he share his journey with another person? More tree planters returning to their cheese-eating lives? He thought not. The direction was wrong. He could share his belly with poor and destitute looking for a life, and the dirty dog lied to them as well. This was Dante's Inferno on wheels. But today the dog had new tricks, much the same as before. "Against the wall and fill my belly. Toronto people first," he said loudly to the crowd. "Toronto people first." Into his belly they went. People of all sizes and shapes and types entered his belly. Many brought their possessions. Some brought too many possessions. The beast was full, yet demanded more. "Only four may go," he shouted. "My sister will be here soon to take the rest." But that too was a lie, for even though his sister was right around the corner, she did not appear. There was no one to drive her through the rainy, stormy night, and she was afraid. Many minutes, some say an hour later, she showed up, and all five of the remaining souls entered her air-conditioned belly for the trip, and it seemed good, because I was one of the five. Oh, there were the same restroom lies and standing in cold dark for no reason, and smoking was also a habit of this dirty dog. She also had another trick, though. Halfway through the journey, many hundreds of miles in the middle of nowhere, her driver left. He just packed up his case and went home. And no other driver came to her aid. Alone they sat with the growling beast. Minutes passed, and still they waited. Others came and left, but those who were doomed to ride the beast did not move. They despaired. Many, many minutes, some say hours later, a driver did appear. I just awoke and have had no coffee, so you must wait. And the people did. They had no choice. This driver had never taken the dog on this trip before. He drove her like the wind, on and on, hour after hour, the beast screamed through the night. The people were sick. The people were sad. The she-dog howled past the restrooms and the washrooms and even the dark and dreary parking lots. The people cried, "Oh, great beast, why torment us so?" "I am new," replied the driver, "and I don't know what to do." Needless to say, the people despaired. Finally, he stopped the beast, for the people needed air. They rejoiced. "Back into my belly," said the beast again. "Only one more hour, and you will be back where you belong," she sang out. And true to her word, the people were returned. Some of them. They were returned late, later than any thought possible, and in poor health and humor. But they had survived the night. The lucky few, like RJ, were vomited out by the side, and the she-dog left in the sun. The others, they heard that familiar order, "Back into my belly." They were sad. Some wailed and were afraid. Back into the belly of the beast they went, never to be seen again. The moral of the story? Never, never trust the dirty dog. Fly instead.
Very good, RJ. That is a lot. There is so much symbolism in there.
And that was, you know, through all of that, the goal that I was perseverating on was the important thing, getting to my daughter and making it good and, you know, having everything that happened just sort of wash off my back because I was perseverating on being the good dad.
It had been something that you had been thinking about for, what, you said 12 years?
Yes. Well, obviously, if you know me, you know that not being with my child is a very, very painful experience for me. And I do think about it, and if I dare say, I do perseverate on it because it's that important to me.
But that is an example how we can take something that we're perseverating on and turning it into something good. You were determined to get to her. And I think that that is the reason why you got to her. Regardless of any obstacle that you came across, you were determined, even traveling alone, and with all the fears and things that happened to you, you know, people have called me a scrapper lots of times. And that is a really good description, I think, of what we are. I mean, we just pick up and just keep going no matter what's happening. We just, you know, figure out a way. We'll figure out a way. So
I agree. I agree completely. And the difference between perseverating on something in a negative way and a positive way is such a, you know, it's night and day. And if we can develop the skills to, you know, stick with the good things and get rid of the bad things, that can help. External brains, people that we can talk to are very helpful in this because sometimes we do get stuck in negative ways too.
Right. I do have written down a few things, ways that we can help if we do get stuck on something that's actually harmful for us. But I wanted to share what I wrote too because, like I said, a lot of people wouldn't see this as positive, but I really think it is. I think it is why I am the way I am today. So here it goes. I sat down today and it just came out. To me, I believe I was born perseverating. Giving up was not an option. Getting stuck on surviving and overcoming all obstacles to live with FASD was the only reason I am who I am. Getting told that I wasn't going to graduate made me more determined. Swimming saved my life, and I'll just talk about that for a minute. Swimming, I was an angry kid. I was a kid that had no direction, no sensory ability to handle my senses or anything. I was just, I was having so many issues at such a young age, at 5, 3. So they took me to a doctor, and what the doctor said was suggested swimming. Well, once I hit that water, I was swimming laps by the time I was five. By the time I was 11 years old, I was one of the top swimmers in the country and swimming junior Olympic type things and traveling all over the place. But I would swim 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, and I also did weightlifting. And to me, it just, you know, 4 hours of swimming a day, lap after lap after lap, just back and forth, I guess you could say is kind of perseverating to me. It was just, you know, and I did that with running. I would just run and, like, you know, kind of gump, you know, I would just run and run and run. When I weightlifted, I would just lift and lift and lift. To the point where my arms gave out on me because I just kept lifting. You know, I didn't know when to stop, I guess you could say. But it took me to the top in athletics. So making it without alcohol saved my life. I became determined that I was not going to drink again. Telling myself every day is a new day allows me to restart and recharge. The determination being stuck on making it is the reason I have 2 degrees, I'm a published author, and that I'm making a pretty good living. A long time ago, photography became my passion. I just kept taking pictures, and I just kept buying prints and matting and frames and entering shows, and I just recently bought a computer. And this passion is turning into something that I'm actually possibly now going to make a living at it. So that is another thing that has turned into a positive, because I just kept perseverating on taking pictures and putting pictures together with matting and frames. My determination to be, to create, to communicate has made me live when they told me I wouldn't. They said I would never drive. And I ended up, you know, I drive, and I also drove a postal truck where it's on the opposite side, on the right side, and I'm used to driving on the left, so I figured that one out. They said I would never hit a ball. I would go in that yard, and I would hit and hit and hit and practice every single day until I got to the point where, I mean, I wasn't hitting home runs every day, but I was hitting home runs. I didn't have the best coordination, so one of the things I really wanted to do was get a unicycle, and not just a bike, no, I wanted a unicycle. So I practiced and practiced literally day after day after day until I was riding 6-foot unicycles in a parade. Yeah.
I love it.
I have the stamina like no one I know. I can paint an entire room. If you tell me I want that painted, I'll do it until it's done. I've moved and set up an entire house or apartment in a weekend. Don't stop me studying until I have it all done. I did high jump for high school, and I would just keep practicing and practicing until I would get to the next level, height, I guess you could say. Do I get stuck in negative? Yeah, I drank quite a bit. Negative thoughts, let others' definitions become my own, and I wouldn't let it go. That my dad's death at 11 controlled me for a great deal of my life. Let my lack of loving motherly figures take me down some pretty rough roads. Let the loss of my sister to the Children's Services foster care system when I was 12 put me in a state of non-forgiveness and not trusting anyone for a lifetime, I could say, for a very, very long time. Allowing my biological mom's words to me that she never loved me and I was a pain in the ass from the first breath were words that never left. Yeah, I let the negative stick, but through all of that, giving up and throwing in the towel was never once an option. Every day waking up and being my absolute best That's what it was every single day. That doesn't mean it's others' best, but it was my best. Every single day, I just did my best. I'm stuck at being the best I can be each and every day. That's not a bad way thing to be stuck on, I don't think. I still can, what does that say? I can still walk into a room and get stuck on not talking, not feeling comfortable, getting food in front of other people, not accepting a change in my day. But in the bigger picture, at the end of the day, I can say I'm stuck on making it, not giving up, and surviving and living with this thing that we call FKST.
Wow.
So that's what I...
You just blew away my story completely. Thank you very much for upstaging me. But as I listen to you, you know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing mindfulness. This is not something that just happens. This is something that you decided that you were going to do.
I think that I decided it first breath. People have actually asked me, with everything that they know about me, why I am the way I am, why I continue to be, have so much resilience and determination to continue and get the degrees, even though it was so hard for me, make the living and have a great job that I do, and just all the negative things that happened, I still continue on with a pretty, I don't think, a very good outlook, considering. So,
well,
I don't know. It just was never an option for me to ever give up. Not ever.
I can see that. And this is a very important point, is that this is a decision that you have, you know, this is your personality. This is your spirit. This is who you are. And, you know, the fact that you're able to honor this and live with it in a very cohesive way is a really incredible thing. I try and do that in my life with my own perseverations too, such as teaching myself things. Now, what I'm finding, though, is when you're in a relationship, a person who perseverates, whether it's for good or bad, can sometimes find themselves sort of left out of a lot of things. The other person doesn't necessarily understand how we learn or why we're doing this. And it's hard to explain to people who don't understand how our brains actually work.
Yeah. It can be difficult for other people who see us to understand why we get stuck in certain areas. But on the other, what I just explained, I mean, it can be to the positive. Now, there are some ways that it can become negative when it's hindering our life in any way or keeping us from doing things that we're supposed to be doing. Like if we're putting a puzzle together and we're just determined we're going to get this puzzle together, but we've got work to do, that could be a bad thing, or video gaming, and we're just stuck on it to the point where we're going to beat this level, and I can do that. When I play video games, I don't play them because of that reason. I will get stuck until I beat that level, and if it takes me 2 hours to beat that level, I will do everything I can, might throw the remote a few times along the way because of the frustration, so it's just not worth it, so I really don't play them. So there can be a negativeness to it, absolutely.
Okay, we do have a caller on the line here, Anne, somebody from 905, so I'm going to say, hello, 905, who are we talking to tonight?
Barry Stanley.
Well, hi, Dr. Stanley, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Okay. Would you care for me to tell you about my experience over the last 15 years? Everything you're saying makes total sense to me, and I've seen many examples of what you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, it was around about 2002 when I first really started to understand this. And once you understand, and see one situation or example, then of course you see others that you didn't see before. When I gave talks about this, it was quite interesting. Those who were actually FASD, and there are not normally many in the audience, would jump up and down with excitement because the what I was describing they related to, and for the first time, someone who was not FASD was describing it often in ways that they couldn't do themselves. Their families who lived with them would sort of nod their heads in recognition. Meanwhile, most of those other people who were there who were well-dedicated and well-meaning professionals didn't have a clue what I was talking about. And it's so encouraging to me to hear you, you two describing so well, because, of course, most FASD people are not able to do that. And in fact, I'm giving a talk in July to a group of psychiatrists and the lawyers, quite a challenge, okay, on this very subject. I've written about it, and I'm quite happy to share this stuff with you. Send me your email addresses. But I've actually been accused of making up these stories, because I have many examples, actual examples, by professionals who just couldn't get their mind around the concept. There is one thing. Go ahead, sorry.
Of it being positive, you mean?
Well, the whole aspect, being positive and using perseveration to escape the chaos in your mind and the negative things. In your case, you were fortunate, you see, because you were well coordinated. Many FASD people simply are not coordinated to be good at sports. But you found that doing that a very positive thing to control your, help your life and so on. Now, RJ is very, well, your example is very interesting because in my experience, the positive perseveration that enables those with FASD to improve their lives usually, most often, is around concern for family members, especially children. And I think you alluded to it as well. In spite of that tremendous effort and continuous effort, they always need someone there because, of course, when you're putting so much effort into that, you're liable to miss other things. So you need that, what we call the external brain, to give you help and guidance, which is, I think, what you said yourself. There is one question I have for both of you. What I found out was, over the years, that a sensory input, whether it could be sound, smell, even taste, sight, or physical stimulation of a positive nature, was often sufficient to break a negative perseveration. So, for example, RJ, in your case, things have not gone back well that day, you're not thinking about your daughter so much, or the other speaker, I'm sorry, I'm not sure, I came in late. And so your negative thoughts are starting to take over. What I found was, and it depends on the individual's sensory profile, but they could actually do something to break that negativity and allow them to move on to the positive perseveration. The classic example is the elastic band, where they give it a good clip on the wrist, and there are other more things like cutting, for example, which we don't recommend, obviously. One little girl had a bright medallion round, and she would look at that and focus on that. So there's many things, but I would try and encourage them to find something. Not everyone was able to do that, but there's some very good. And what was encouraging about it was, I found, because I saw some people for a number of years, that over a period of time, they didn't have to actually use the stimulation, but were able to think about it. So what that told me was that there was an actual plasticity, if you like, a change in the brain, the way the different parts of the brain were working, so they didn't actually have to have that sensory stimulation. That took time. I don't want to use all your time up, but I have a very good story. I don't know whether you'd like me to carry on or not. Do you,
no, go, do you, please. Go ahead.
Are you sure? I don't want to. First of all, do either of you have any examples? Do you have anything that other people may be listening that, some sort of a sensory impact on you that breaks your negativity and allows you to refocus? Do you have anything?
The one thing that I was just thinking of, though, when you were talking about that a change in the brain is actually, I think it was a couple weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about how the brain, and you probably know about this a lot more than I do, if I'm right on this, that the brain actually travels once you have a thought. That thought goes a certain way every time. It like has an engraved part of the brain, like it just goes a certain direction. But you have to like work at it to make it go a different direction. And it takes so many times to make that thought go a different direction. And it actually is a change in the brain to the point where it will go that way automatically.
Well, yeah, one of the problems is that most of the work has been done on either normal brains or conditions which have a very localized brain injury or something, whereas FASD affects all parts of the brain. The one thing I've learned, and I'm not studying on neurology now, is that the brain, it is the most complex system we know of, on Earth anyway, and every part of the brain interacts in some way or some degree, one way or another. So it's a very complex system. But it illustrates the point. I used to see a family of three children who were taken from their parents, and they were in foster care. But the CAS had kept them in touch with the parents, and they would actually go and stay for weekends occasionally and things like that. And as part of the process of me seeing these children and educating the foster parents, the CAS workers suggested that the parents, the natural parents, come and see me.
Right.
And in the process of talking to them, they'd had alcohol and anger issues and so on. The father said, I used to be, and I think we established, although a diagnosis wasn't made, he was most probably FASD, as he said himself, because his mother was an alcoholic and he had all sorts of reasons to think that. So I mentioned, he said he'd had a serious anger problem, which is one of the reasons why the children had been taken away.
Yeah.
And I said, and his wife said, but he doesn't have it now. So I said, well, did you have any treatments? Oh, he said, I had lots of anger management. It didn't work. So I said, well, how come you're not angry now? Well, he couldn't explain it. So I told him what I've just been telling you. And he said, no, I didn't do anything like that. There was nothing like that. But he thought about it. And a few minutes later in the conversation, he said, I've been thinking about that. Is this what you mean? And this is what he told me. He was a Catholic.
Yeah.
And he had a crucifix. And every time he got angry, when they were losing the children, he finally admitted, of course, it was a huge problem, but he didn't know what to do about it. All anger management didn't work. Cognitive therapy didn't work. And he said, I used to squeeze my crucifix till my hand bled every time I was angry because the pain would stop me. This is what you mean. I said, yes. He said, I did that for years, but I don't do it anymore. Now, this to me is very exciting because what it tells me is that painful stimulation allowed him to pause with his anger, think about his kids, and stop being angry. But eventually, after some years or whatever it was, he just simply stopped doing it without realizing it because his brain process had changed. And that's very exciting. The sad thing is that none of the neurologists, all these experts who do all this research, this tremendous amount of research, they never look at prenatal alcohol or FASD as an example. And if they did, they would learn so much. Anyway, I don't want to
Actually, Dr. Stanley, where you're going here is perfect. And yes, I really, really like those examples. Now, what we're talking about here from the little bit of education that I have, we're talking about synapses that are connecting that didn't connect before. And yes, even to the point where just the idea of a soothing action can, in fact, trigger the endorphins and everything in our mind. Now, we're finding with older adults living with FASD, there's a process known as myelination, which is basically a streamlining of the different synapses into, you know, sort of like going from a dirt road to a city street to a highway to hopefully like a superhighway. So that helps our connections and everything move more quickly. Now, there is a doctor actually in the United States, Dr. Ed Riley of San Diego State University, and now he's a distinguished professor of psychology, and he's a neurobehavioral guy. And he is actually trying, as we're speaking, to get funding to work specifically on brains affected by prenatal alcohol.
You know, I know him very well. He's done a lot of good work. He's done a lot of papers on FASD. But it's the neurology, the study of the brain, has absolutely exploded in the last 15 years. Epigenetics has exploded. And
yes.
since the United States government said they were no longer going to fund psychiatric research unless it was brain-based, which was about 3 years ago, psychiatric conditions or the brain pathology has expanded. What hasn't expanded in all that, well, it has. Certainly there's more research on an FASD in the brain, but far less. It's just they don't want to go. They don't want to go where alcohol is, I'm afraid. Anyway, we'll see. I just want you to know that you're in my experience, you're absolutely right. There's explanations for how it's working. It's great to hear you talking because perhaps they'll listen to you when they don't listen to me. I don't know. you'll have
can
to talk.
Certainly
to,
hope so. Thank
you
need
to
very
talk
much.
To some neurologists and doctors and psychiatrists. I'll see how I get on. Anyway, if you send your remember, RJ, you're going to send me your email address, and
going to do that, sir. Definitely, it is on my list.
I'll send you some information more about it.
Great.
And I have a copy of my presentation, but I don't like to share it until after I've given it, which will be in July.
I understand that, and I can't
wait. But
to
I do have other stuff on the subject.
Fantastic.
Okay.
I'll be getting that to you, sir, definitely, sure, for sure.
Okay. You're doing really
okay.
Well. Yeah.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add, before you mute him, I just wanted to add something. One of the things that I always did whenever things started escalating with me so I didn't want to hurt myself, which, you know, if you go into like a meltdown type situation and I'm like hurting, like want to hit myself basically.
Right.
One of the things that I always did was I transferred that feeling of my swimming where I would just do lap after lap and it was so calming for me because it was a release. I would just swim in my brain. I would just think of every single lap.
Well, I'm sorry, I missed your name and I apologize for that. Who am I talking to?
Dan.
Dan?
Dan. A-N. No,
Diane.
It's A-N-M. Ann.
Oh, Ann, I beg your pardon, and I'm sorry. If you stop and think about it, what you've just described is what I described with the man and the crucifix.
Right.
You used for many years the soothing and the stimulation, the soothing of the swimming, everything that involved to bring you peace. And what you have learned is eventually, after how many years, I don't know, you perhaps you can tell us, you eventually learned that you didn't actually have to swim anymore to do that. In your own mind, you could create it and do it. That's what he did, but he didn't realize he'd done it, you see. How long do you think it was before you could do that in your mind, as you just so well described then?
I did it as an adult for years, even after I quit swimming. And I really didn't even know when I started. I had found myself in a pretty abusive relationship. And I would spend all of my going to sleep for hours it would take me to go to sleep to call me. Instead of, it would just, as soon as I started thinking about swimming, am, and I'm talking stroke by stroke by stroke, counting the strokes.
Absolutely.
Into the,
and roughly how old were you then, do you think? Just like,
in my 20s.
How old were you when you started to think like that, do you think?
I would say, I would say probably early 20s.
Okay, so we could say then it took you, and you started swimming at what age, 6 or something?
Yeah, I was very young when I started.
So let's say it took 15 years or more, but finally your brain learned to do that. It took a long time. And that is, but it, the thing is, it's hope, you see. It raises the hope that if only we could get these researchers to look at that phenomena, then and direct their expertise, because there's a tremendous amount known about the brain, and to use your examples like yours, I'm sure they would be very helpful. Anyway, there's reasons I understand completely what you guys have been doing. You've verified all my observations with my patients over the years, and you're doing a good job. You need to clarify that in your mind and explain it as often as you can, especially, both to those affected with FASD, but also to other people who haven't got, you know, because it's part of the sea change. It's part of the 180-degree change that people have to make who are not FASD to understand and help. It's part of that process.
I
think I've said too much.
No. Oh, absolutely not. And when RJ and I were talking about this today, I mean, I had no idea that he felt the exact same way that I did about it. And we just instantly connected with that we both have such a more of a positive experience than a negative when it comes to that. So, I mean, it's made me survive, and I believe RJ
as
well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. Actually, the very first time that I recognized positive perseveration was when I was visiting a place for, it was a, they didn't sleep over, but it was a place where street kids could go. And there was a young man there who was about 20, I guess, and I got talking to him. He was FASD. And he said that, and he described a most appalling childhood. In fact, he hadn't had a childhood, really. He'd gone on the streets around about 10, and he'd gone into prostitution, drugs, alcohol. You name it, he'd done it. But he was obviously very bright. And at some point, round about the time that he found this place to go, he said to himself, or maybe someone pointed it out, all my friends are dying or going to jail. I don't want to do that. So he recognized that he would have to break away from all those people that he normally associated with, not go into any more bars, stay off drugs and alcohol. And he was fortunate because he had this church-run place that he could go, and eventually he was sort of working there. And I said to him, well, this is wonderful, but you know, because this was the point of my education, this is many years ago, how come you can do this? Because FASD people are not supposed to be able to change like that. Well, it turned out, and the way he could do it, of course, and this was clarifying it in my mind, was he perseverated on it. He said, I think about it all the time. A day doesn't go by, an hour doesn't go by. I keep telling myself. So that brought home again this perseveration thing. And this is how I slowly started to fully understand from listening to all these cases. Yeah.
Well, I think what a lot of neurotypical people don't understand is we own our actions. We feel responsible for them. And when we hurt people, which is quite often what we do, like in my particular case, I made it a priority to not hurt other people. So, yeah, that was very, very mindful. And I was hearing a lot of that from Anne, too, about, you know, we know what works for us, and then we find a way to apply it to other parts of our life.
Yeah. Now, But not everyone, unfortunately, with this condition can do it. There's a number of many factors. There's the individual pattern of brain, you know, the, how it's affected, all the different parts. Your early childhood experience, even though it can be very bad, there's always, must have been, in my mind, who's not affected, in my mind, correct me if I'm wrong, there has to be somewhere in the past, no matter how negative it was, a ray, a kind word, some positive direction to have helped you. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel that.
No, absolutely. I know where how Anne will answer this already, but yes, in my life there were two people who, out of all of the others, were supportive in ways that they sort of understood that, you know, my brain worked a little differently. And, you know, it was through meeting just a couple of people like that through my first, say, 20
right.
years that I had hope.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, well, you're certainly endorsing, verifying all my observations, which is very gratifying. And all I have to say, we just keep you need to keep going.
It is a huge thrill for us, too, because we like to call this FASD raw. We're just going by what we've learned in our lives, and anywhere along the way that we can find any information that might sort of help explain that, we try to bring it out. But, you know, to hear your words is very, very affirming to both of us, too, and I do thank you for calling in, Dr. Stanley. That's great.
Where are you located?
I live in Oakville, Ontario, near Toronto. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And,
curious.
I have a feeling I'm sorry, I didn't catch originally who you were. Have we communicated in the past ourselves? No?
I don't think so.
No.
Unfortunately, I'm
one of the things about getting old is you slowly have more and more affinity with FASD. I can tell you that, working memory also. And I have been over the years in contact with many people, so I'm always cautious. Sometimes I think I have been when I haven't. Other times I have when I don't realize it. So it can be embarrassing at times. anyway, yeah. No, okay. Well, keep it up, and God bless. Okay.
Well, thank you very, very much. And go ahead. You can use it if you want. Actually, some of the things that he was talking about, I actually have written down here for some things that have helped me, RJ, and maybe you, I'm sure that you can relate with this, some things that you've had to do. If I find myself really stuck on something, finding a way to redirect, start a new activity. Sometimes I'll just start doing something else because I find myself getting, and I know that I'm heading to a not so good place. So I will purposefully, mindfully start a new activity. And I almost have to do it abruptly. It's like an abrupt stop because if I don't, I definitely will hit that bad place. Do you ever find yourself doing that?
Willful self-redirection? Yes. Yes. I can see that, you know, I'm on a path that I don't think is going to end good. And, yeah, I need to get off that train somehow, whatever it takes. And what you're talking about is it's like jumping off a train because your brain is already going that way and like it's going to go unless you can somehow derail it, like at that speed. It's not about stopping it. It's about getting off. So, yeah, I understand exactly what you mean, and redirection is key. Part of the reason that I dance and bounce around, again, it sort of like helps me reset. It moves energy from one area to another, gets the blood flowing. If that means, you know, hop on my bike and ride around the block three times, that's great, whatever it takes.
Great. Like when I'm in photography, I'll start working on my pictures. If I'm stuck on something for work, and I literally have been working on it for 2 or 3 hours, and I just keep working on it, and just I'm to the point of frustration, and I can see it's not going good. I'll just turn that off, start working on my Photoshop. I'll just do anything I can to start working on my pictures or something like that. So, it, like you said, it resets me. And sometimes if we can't self-monitor and self-regulate, we do need our external brains to say, hey, you know, I think you are heading to a point where you need a break. But hopefully we can all get to the point where we can recognize it most of the time so we can give ourselves that break. Like our kids in the school where I work for autism, we have the sensory room, and they just will, some of them know before they reach a point and we see the signals that they're going in a wrong direction, they'll come to us and say, I need to go in the sensory room. I just need 5 minutes.
Okay,
so,
as a professional educator, I'm going to pick your brain now. If a person is perseverating and they need, in your opinion, and possibly, you know, I would trust that, if they, let's say, could use redirection, how do you introduce redirection without causing that person to suddenly feel attacked? Do you know what I mean?
Okay. Actually, at our school, what we do is we have a kid who, and this is just an example, but we do it with all of our kids, whatever they're perseverating on. He perseverates on video games. No matter what we talk about, no matter what subject we're talking about, it could even be math, he finds his way to a video game or Pokemon or something regarding that type of thing. He has a story and example for everything. It's like you can watch his mind work. And we're talking about World War II or something in social studies, and he'll just say, well, in Pokemon, and, you know, and he's just got this whole great big example of, and normally in the gaming world, somehow it fits, but, so what we try to do, and we just did this with him, we're doing a thing on autism, because we just had Autism Awareness Month. So this particular student is writing a paper on how video game characters or characters in the shows that he watches and types of things, how they show characteristics of people on the autism spectrum. So we are expanding his perseveration. We're trying to broaden it.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So, like, if somebody is, I used puzzles earlier, somebody perseverates on puzzles, then we try to take that and make it into a math problem and make, you know, take some of their passions, and then we broaden it and we keep broadening it. Like,
interesting.
Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to say that that is very interesting, because that goes into a lot of what we're saying is, if, you know, you've got that passion and that drive in one direction, it can be widened to be
right,
a larger scope, and that is really incredible. So it's a skill that, you know, people will have to work on, because it doesn't, you know, necessarily come easy working with us, but, you know, we're worth it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And we've seen our kids' interests broaden. And if you can make connections to something else, which causes connections to something else, their interests will broaden. In fact, this particular kid, he's not just, I mean, he is still in video games. I mean, he will always be. He'll probably make $1 million developing video games someday. But he now rides his bike. He goes outside every single day. Before, he didn't do any of that stuff. And he's starting to have conversations with kids at school of things that they are interested in instead of just what he is interested in. And he'll actually sit at the lunch table. So what did you do this weekend? What he can't talk about sports yet. That's just not in his, like, no. He's just not there yet. But he's broadening, and he's trying. So we give him extra points for trying to, you know, show interest in what other people like besides just what he likes. So we're getting there.
Definitely. And sort of like what Dr. Stanley was talking about when he called in and what you and I were talking about earlier, we had been going around and looking at a few sites and looking at the word perseveration, and we were getting a lot of negative hits where it's identified with TBI, it's considered a maladaptive process. Now, that was slightly older stuff that's still out there on the internet that I had seen, and that particularly struck me. And hearing what Dr. Stanley had to say and the research that he's done makes what we're saying just sort of make that much more sense. Because we found what works for us. Now, what works for you is different than what works for me, and it'll be different from the next person. The results in the end will be different. And, you know, in a few years, who's going to remember us when all these incredible FASD people living with FASD are rising to become these great speakers? I mean, this is just the beginning, so it's a very positive and fantastic place to be. And I just love doing this. This is more fun than a barrel of cats. I love it.
It really is, and all the things that I perseverate on now, RJ, and I think that you might know this, you and I are on the same page with this, and I think that that's why something like this is happening, is that I perseverate on trying to help people that are coming after us, and how can we help them have a different path than we did? How can we help caregivers understand FASD better? So that's like my mission, and I think that RJ and I are both in agreement that we are stuck in a good way in trying to help people make sense of this thing that we call FASD and how they can live better, productive lives, and that it doesn't have to be a total negative, that there are so many positives to it. And anything within FASD, if you have the tools and the abilities and the know-how and the determination, you can live a very productive, solid life. I believe that.
I believe that to be true, too. And again, everybody's final outcomes will be different. External brains, it's nice to have another person there. It's not a limitation or anything like that. So
we literally have 3 minutes, but we have a hand raised. So
I see that. I think I know who it is.
You can make the all mute them if they can make it 2 minutes. Okay, ready? Did it go? Okay. Go ahead, 905.
Hello,
are
905.
You there?
Hello?
Well, it looks like they're there. Okay.
Oh,
all right, well, we have 2 minutes left.
Caller.
We have 2 minutes left, RJ. Anything that you want to say before we're done?
Oh, let me think. I've said so much already this evening. Thank you for letting me read my story. I hadn't looked at that in a while, and when the subject of perseveration came up, and I got to tell you, this is actually partially due to talking to Dr. Stanley a couple of weeks ago in Hamilton where I met him. This is a really incredible thing, and doing this show is just, I've learned so much, and I'm just happy to hopefully have passed something on to other people. And I can't wait to do our next one, whatever that's going to be about.
Okay, well, they raised their hand again, so we're going to try one more time. We have about a minute left.
It's Savannah.
I pushed it.
Hello. Do we have you there?
Savannah? Is it Savannah?
Okay, try now. 959. Well, we're having fun.
Hi,
anyway.
Guys.
There she is.
Hi.
Savannah?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, we
yeah,
can.
Yeah, it's breaking up a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that I call perseveration a gift from the universe. And that was
okay.
All I wanted to tell you.
Well, that was definitely worth sharing. Thank you so much for that, and I think we're going to end on that. Perseveration as a gift from the universe. Thank you very much for sharing that, Savannah.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, you have a great evening now, and everybody else, too. Thank you all very much, and if you want to sign us out, that would be great. Thank you.
All right, we will post this. I'm Flying with Broken Wings tonight, this podcast, and our Cheesecake Emporium. And it will go on our website, FASD Raw. So join us next week, and we will see what we talk about then. All right. Talk to you later.
Good night.